On this episode, we play The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild, a game where you play as the greatest chef in all of Hyrule. Hello and welcome to What's in a Game from Fountain City Frequency, a podcast where the nerdiest couple you know take a deep dive into video games both old and new. I'm Cody Newell.
And I'm Tangle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're sitting across from me in a green leotard, and it's, it's really, really comfortable in here with you and that, Dana.
I'm Dana Masters.
Not Tingle.
Not Tingle.
And this week, we're talking about The Legend of Zelda: Breath of the Wild.
Aw, yeah.
Yes, we got a Nintendo Switch, like we said last time, and we've been playing way too much Zelda.
We've played over 40 hours.
Which we didn't know until our friend Brent told us, and it was like, oh no, 40 hours.
Whatever. We could play more.
Oh, we're going to play more.
Oh, I know. That's what we're doing after we do this.
I was just surprised. I didn't think that we had played that much.
I mean, we dedicated a whole weekend to it.
That's true. But I'm always bad at, like, estimating how much of a game I've played. Like, I thought I played, like, I was like, oh, I've only played, like, 30 hours of Witcher 3, and I had actually played, like, 67.
Ew.
And I was like, whoa! But, yes, we've been playing a ton of Zelda, and I guess let's just get right into this one and talk about the Switch, the Nintendo Switch.
Because this is part one.
Right, this is part one of our Zelda talk. We'll probably have several more parts because this game is just too damn big for one episode. Yeah. So what are your kind of general impressions of the Nintendo Switch itself, Dana?
I mean, overall, I really like it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy that I can play on a television. And then when I'm like, I need to start getting ready for bed, I'll just take it with me.
Right.
And I take it with me to bed. And it's great.
They've hooked you. They've hooked you with it.
Yeah.
It is really cool, though, to be able to do that. And, and it's cool that it works so easily. Like, you just pop that thing onto the console dock, and it's really, it doesn't feel like finicky or weird or like you need to like snap it down in there. You just kind of place it in there and it perfectly kind of works. And then you have the Joy-Con controllers that kind of snap onto this or like slide into the sides. Though I think both of us were a little less impressed with the controllers,
at least for Breath of the Wild. It didn't feel natural where they had like the buttons placed, like, this is how you jump, this is how you accelerate, this is how you grab things. And I'm like, ugh. Yeah. That took a while to get used to.
Yeah, and it feels almost like, it's like the sticks are almost a little too, like, they need a little bit more length on them or something, because it's like they're almost too nubby. And there's times where it's like a little bit difficult to kind of get them to, they're not quite accurate enough.
The controllers are pretty small.
Yeah, they
are. Which is great for portability, which is what I love, but it's hard to get used to.
It is. But I also like the motion controls on the right Joy-Con actually like works pretty well and like feels pretty good. It feels like a natural kind of use of motion control since Nintendo has been into that for the past like 10 years since the Wii, which was nice. I didn't know that it had motion control on it until I picked it up and was like, oh, this thing is moving and actually doing things. Whoa.
Which is pretty cool.
I will say $300 is a pretty good price for it, too.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Though, man, it seems like stock is still really, really difficult to find. Like, really, really
snatch
hard.
That up.
Oh, yeah. We jumped on it. There was no messing around. We had to get that thing.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do worry about with the Switch, though, is, like, right now it doesn't have hardly any of, like, the online store, you know, functionality.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the virtual console, which, if they can get all of their titles onto this thing, that would really be a huge selling point for this thing, because like being able to pick this thing up and take it into bed and play Majora's Mask or,
yes,
you know, being able to play Chrono Trigger, Earthbound, whatever they have on this thing, like that would be, I'm really hoping that that comes through. I'm sure here in like a year, they'll probably fill it out, but
we'll see.
We'll see.
Only time can tell.
But they did release with a kick-ass game for launch.
Oh, God.
Zelda Breath of the Wild.
It's so good.
Let's get into it. Let's talk about it.
All right.
Mm-hmm. The Legend of Zelda, long-running series from Nintendo. Breath of the Wild is the latest, and it's kind of like the biggest attempt by Nintendo to kind of freshen up the series, which has been a little bit formulaic since, like, Ocarina of Time for the Nintendo 64. That was kind of like what laid the foundation for 3D Zelda, and it really hasn't changed a whole lot since then. But this game is much more of a modern open world game. What do you think about that switch over from, you know, kind of a semi-open world that had dungeons to what now is like very much like a modern open world game?
I mean, it's still formulaic in terms of the story, from what we can tell.
There hasn't been a whole lot of it yet.
I mean, but it's still a princess named Zelda.
Right.
A guy named Link and Calamity Ganon.
You have been asleep for the past 100 years. The beast. When the beast regains its true power, this world will face its end.
But this time, at least, Ganon is less of like a figure and more of like this evil presence.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Just a heads up, Cody and I are not super far into like the story part of this game.
Yeah.
There is a lot of things to do, and we have gotten so distracted.
For 40 hours, basically.
There are like four guardians, which are like touch points in this story that you have to, if you want. You don't have to do anything in this game. You can go straight to Calamity Ganon if you want.
Can you?
Yeah. Like, as soon as you get the glider, you can go straight to Hyrule Castle. But if you do decide to follow, like, the story and the path that is kind of set out, like, there are four guardians. Cody and I have only hit one. And we don't even have all of the map yet. And we've played, like, over 40 hours.
Yep.
So I think that's great.
Yeah.
We haven't seen much of the story yet, but from what we can tell, it's in that same grain. You know, it's still got the princess, and you've got, you know, you've even got the king, and you've got the Zoras and the Gorons. But, like, switching it up in terms of, like, how open this world is, I think that's exactly what Zelda fans have wanted. Like, it's this whole world that you get to explore, and you feel more a part of it, and it seems endless at this point. Like, this is a game you can play over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Or just, like, keep playing and, like, avoid that final battle because there's so much to do.
Well, it's definitely, like, one of those games where, like, our friends Brent and Brett have both been playing and, like, they're seeing completely different stuff than we are. Like, we've all played the game quite a bit at this point. And, like, I was watching Brent play and he had things that were, I was like, what is that? Like, where did you find that? And he's like, oh, it's, you know, this thing over in this part of the world, and you didn't know. And it's like, dude, I'd had no clue that was even a thing at all.
But what was it that we were doing that he was like, what?
Oh, I can't. There were a couple of things where he was like, what are you doing? Like, you found what? And it was like, yeah, we found this.
Oh, we had found the fairy fountains.
Oh, right.
We hadn't found any of those yet.
We found fairy fountains and star fragments falling from the sky.
Yeah.
We found one of those.
That was pretty dope.
And they do a really great job of getting you to explore the world by making it really fun and easy to do. Mm-hmm. Like, you get, like you said, you get the glider really pretty early on once you make it through kind of like the tutorial area, which in and of itself, like, I'm so glad that this is not a Zelda game that has like an hour to 2 hour long tutorial like these games usually do. Because I remember playing Twilight Princess and just being like, oh my God, can we please, like, I know how to play a
Link,
Zelda game.
Show us how to use your sword again.
Right. Throw this eagle over it like a bee's net. It's like, oh, please, I don't want to do this.
Link,
like,
can you bring me my baby carrier?
Right. Right. It's like, what? Like, this is a Legend of Zelda.
Errand boy.
Yeah. So I'm glad that that doesn't happen. And I'm glad that you get the glider early on. And from the very beginning, you have the ability to jump and to climb, which is a huge thing because this world has a lot of verticality and a lot of places where you can climb up to the top of a mountain. And it's like the cliched open world thing of like, if you can see that mountain, you can climb it. But it's actually like really true this time around. Like, you don't have to pull that crazy shit in like Fallout and Skyrim where you're trying to go up a mountain but you're kind of like going like sideways and tricking the game by jumping over and over. You don't have to do any of that, which I'm really glad to see. And I think that makes this game really unique and definitely stands out as a Zelda game because there's never been something like that before. There's been the glider a little bit, but...
Well, I feel like I haven't played a whole lot of open world games. I've played like Fable and a little bit of Fallout, but I always felt like a little bored because I was this generic character and I could go do this side quest and I don't know. Sometimes the world like bored me. Like it's gray and dim and a wasteland, but there is so much in like this version of Hyrule.
Yeah.
Like so many like hidden things, like treasure. The characters are really interesting and a lot of the times funny.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking about this, but like the music combined with some of there's some very like Japanese cultural influences and like the way that it looks. It feels like a Miyazaki film at times, and it's like whimsical and beautiful, and you want to keep pushing and you want to keep exploring. Like, I'm not tired of doing that, and I am someone who doesn't like open world as much, and I'm like, oh, what else can I explore? Like, this is the kind of open world that I've wanted.
Well, that's a great point about, like, this does feel like a Studio Ghibli or a Miyazaki film in that, like, the music, like, is very stripped down, and it's a lot of piano. Blending that with the kind of cel-shaded, illustrated visuals, like, really, really ties it together for me. And we changed the voice acting from English to Japanese.
We did.
Because we couldn't stand Zelda's English voice.
I will say, like, that was something I couldn't stand right off the bat. When I heard it in the trailers, I was like, I'm not going to like this.
Yeah.
The whole, open your eyes, Link.
That is a Sheikah slate. Take it. It will help guide you after your long slumber.
それはシーカーストーン。長き眠りから覚めたあなたを導くでしょう。
The woman who voiced her, I don't think her voice is supposed to be that high. Like we
listened to her voice reel and it was like her voice was way deeper in other stuff.
It was better suited that way too. It just sounds like we're pushing the princess role. Oh my. Whereas you like switch to the Japanese version and it's a little bit deeper and a little more like urgent, like a little more regal and composed.
Yeah.
She just sounded breathy and hysterical.
Yeah.
So listening to it in the Japanese version, like it's a different game almost.
Yeah. And I think it adds to that kind of quality because the game I feel like is maybe the most, and this is going to sound ridiculous since this game is made by a Japanese company, but it's like the most Japanese Zelda game that I've maybe played in a really long time.
There's a lot of Japanese humor in this.
There is. And just a lot of visual, like Kakariko Village, a lot of the architecture is very Japanese. You know, it looks like, you know, shrines that you might see in Japan or, you know.
The architecture is like village style.
Right.
It's pretty evident there are some characters that you run into who, like, will put, like, peace signs up and go, snap!
Yeah.
Like, things like that. And when you go to the Zora kingdom, like, there's a Zora prince who guides you. And the entire time, he's giving you, like, a thumbs up, a wink, and, like...
Ha-ha!
Yeah, all the time. It's very, like, Japanese hero.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
We didn't actually talk about this, but you're actually a pretty damn big fan of Zelda games in general.
I will admit that I have not played all the games, but I love every game that I have played, and I will eventually play them all.
Which, see, I'm not as big a fan as of the series. Like, I've played a lot of Zelda games.
I want a Triforce tattoo.
See, I'm not at that level, for sure. Like, I've definitely enjoyed my favorites that I've ever played, I think, were Wind Waker, which a lot of people had a problem with when that came out.
I still haven't played that one.
Don't listen to anyone who says that Wind Waker is not a great game. It is a fantastic Zelda game. And also, I really liked Majora's Mask.
I love Majora's Mask.
Which, that's also a game that when it came out, like, some people hated that game.
God, I loved it. That was so creepy.
I did, too. I thought it was weird. It was scary. You're right.
I loved
it. Was scary.
It.
Like, that happy mask guy, boy.
I thought Skull Kid with Majora's Mask on him was, yeah, like, incredibly scary. I was like, ugh!
Well, and like when Link puts on the masks. It's terrifying. So for a while, like, I didn't play Skyward Sword. The last Zelda game I played was Twilight Princess.
I still liked Skyward Sword. I don't know how people feel about that game, but that was supposed to be, like, the origin game. Right. Like, this was the start of the story, the reincarnation cycle.
Yeah.
There were elements to that game that I really liked that I think they kept and put in Breath of the Wild, like the gliding.
The art style in general kind of seems like it's not that much different from Skyward Sword either.
I mean, they played with, like, new devices, too. Like, there was one item that, like, sent you back in time. Like, just that small area. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of where some of those Sheikah Slate abilities that you have kind of come from. Like,
right, because you get rechargeable abilities through basically a, like, facsimile of a Nintendo Switch called a Sheikah Slate,
mm-hmm,
in Breath of the Wild. And that changes things. That's a really – so this is, like, a thing that – like, this game really does, like, change up the formula quite a bit. And the Sheikah Slate is a big part of that because you get bombs through the Sheikah Slate. Mm-hmm. And normally you'd have to find bombs, get bigger bomb bags to hold more bombs.
Thank goodness.
And thank goodness you don't have that anymore, because it's just, like, it's so much easier to just be like, okay, it's on a timer, you know, and I can upgrade it by finding, you know, stuff throughout the world to make the timer, you know, the cooldown quicker. It's just so much. I feel like that adds to your ability to, like, really, like, play around in this game, you know, because you can just, you know, chuck bombs off of a cliff at bokoblins that are dancing around a fire, or, you know, set up little situations and really see what'll happen.
And you got all of those right away.
Right.
It wasn't like you were going to different temples to get the boomerang, to get the bomb bag, to get the blah blah blah, whatever you needed. Like,
right,
these tools were given to you right off the bat.
Yeah.
Which I think they used the story to make that feasible.
Yeah.
You pick up whatever weapons you find.
Right.
Which is pretty, it's interesting.
I think it's better to entice players through the game world to have your equipment, like your weapons, your shields, your bows, be the things that are disposable that you kind of need to go out and find more of. And I think that pushes me to, like, fight more enemies, to find more weapons, you know, or find the shrines that you have to find throughout the world that help you get heart containers. I mean, there's not even heart pieces in this game. That used to be a huge part of Zelda games for a really long time, was finding four heart containers. Now that's just not even a thing. You find shrines throughout the world and turn them in once you've got four.
I mean, speaking of things that they got rid of, you don't have a guide in this game.
Right.
Like, I think you've had a guide ever since, like, Ocarina of Time. Like, after the arcade games, you had a fairy, or your sword talked to you, or your hat talked to you. It's just you. There's nothing prompting you to, like, hey, listen, hey, hey, did you forget we were supposed to go to the mountain?
Right.
Hey, you're supposed to be in the forest right now. Right. Hey, that's Ganondorf. Are you scared?
Right.
Like, it's you. You get to take your time. Like,
which I feel like that's also part of this game and part of Nintendo and the designers saying, like, okay, we're going to trust the player a little bit more. We're going to, like, trust that they can make their way through this world. Trust that they can fight enemies that are a lot of times really hard. Like, we died a lot in the first, I'd say, like, 10, 20 hours, where we were just, like, getting slain by fucking moblins all over the place.
I mean, I still am in some parts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're still getting wrecked by some enemies. And there's definitely areas where it's like, okay, I think we need to turn around, because we're just not really meant for this.
We came across, like, a giant dragon. We're like, we've got, like, 5 hearts right now. Yeah. I don't know if we should do this.
We've got 5 hearts and we're freezing to death on the top of the mountain. Let's get off of here.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, I feel like that takes influence from, like, Dark Souls and Witcher 3, which, like, Witcher 3 is definitely, I would say Witcher 3 is probably the best open world game that I've played in the last 5 years easily. And so it's cool to see them taking sort of cues from games that are right now are really hot for, you know, good reason. They're kind of taking the difficulty and the kind of, I don't know, they're trusting the players a little bit more with the game. Because I feel like in, like, Twilight Princess and maybe with Skyward Sword, I don't know, but in Twilight Princess it was like, they're going to tell me how to do every single thing and hold my hand the whole time. And it's like, I don't think that was necessary.
I would need to replay Skyward Sword.
Yeah. Hey, y'all. Taking just a minute out of our Zelda talk, our part one Zelda talk, to say thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Me and Dana have had a blast making this, and we've had some really great response. If you can, just asking you real nicely, real kindly, to rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening to this podcast on. We don't do anything to advertise the show. We don't pay for any advertisement or anything like that. And also tell a friend. If you like this podcast, just tell somebody about it. Say, hey, listen to What's in a Game. Once again, thank you so much. And back to the Zelda talk.
This game is massive and has a lot for you to do. Like, we have spent maybe 35 of our 40 hours that we've played just exploring and finding things. So, like Cody's mentioned before, there are shrines with puzzles in them.
Right.
And you get, like, a hero's orb or something, a spirit orb. And you trade those in for hearts, or you can trade them in for, like, more stamina.
Right, which stamina is a new thing, a big new thing in this game, mm-hmm. where you have to watch that pretty continuously when you're climbing, otherwise you can fall off.
Yeah. But there are 120 shrines. Yeah. We feel like we found a ton. We've only found 44.
Yeah.
Well, we know where a lot of them are. We just haven't gotten them yet. But I mean, they're everywhere too. They're not all like close together. Some of them are pretty well hidden. Some of them are like farther off. 120, we only found like 44.
Right.
Like there are maybe like 70 that we can like see pretty easily. We found one hidden behind a wall of rocks across a river. So you had to like float a bomb down.
Right.
One behind a waterfall. There's one with a chick who's so dehydrated, you can't get in until you give her one last drop of that drink that she wants.
Right.
There's also, you can gather these things called Korok seeds from the Korok,
right?
And use those
forest to forest spirits of the Lost Woods.
Forest spirits,
yeah.
You can use those to like expand your inventory,
yeah.
And they are everywhere. And I looked up today how many there are, and there are 900 that you can collect. We have only found like 55.
900.
My mind is blown. 900, and. There's still two pieces of this map that we haven't unlocked, and we only unlocked a majority of this map because I was like, I'm going to go find the towers to unlock them.
Right. We haven't even – it's like some of the areas we've been running around in for hours and still haven't found, like, probably even half of the things or half of the quests.
Yeah.
Or, because there's so many there's so many side quests and shrine quests that have, like, a puzzle that you have to solve to be able to get into them in the first place. And,
right.
And so many little challenges, like with that island, Eventide Island, where you show up and the challenge is basically that you get on the island and all of your equipment is stripped from you. And so you have to gather everything you can on that island. And that was like, that was really cool because we had spent hours up to that point. Like, okay, we're cooking food, we're getting, you know, all these swords, we're getting these bows, and then we show up and it's like, oh, yeah, it's all gone. Like, you're screwed.
Or that giant maze, like, holy cow,
that was nuts.
Weird.
That was nuts.
Yeah. Like this, it has a lot to offer.
Yeah.
I mean,
what's been your favorite area so far?
You know what? So Cody and I are splitting the Switch, and we try to play it together. But I got it the
joint
last
custody.
Couple days. I got it the last couple days, so I've been playing it by myself, and I'm trying not to hit major plot points or anything like that. Just like exploring the area, finding Korok seeds, making food.
Sure.
But I did find the Gerudo Desert.
Yeah,
that area looks so cool.
Yeah,
I barely got into it. I didn't check out too much of it, but it's got like. Some fun stuff, like the guardian that we're going to have to get looks nuts. If it sets its eyes on you, it electrocutes you.
Oh, God.
Like, and I mean, you can run away from it, and it won't kill you immediately, but I was like terrified. And it just looked like so much fun. So I think that's one of my favorite areas so far.
Cool.
What's one of your favorite areas?
Well, so I think it might have been close to Gerudo. There was that, like, and I think you were actually playing through this one, but it was, like, to get to the shrine, it was this underground, like, tunnel that had been, like, cut out. And it looked very, like, Shadow of the Colossus style. And there were, like, a bunch of fans. And so the, like, challenge was you had to, like, glide through the tunnel. And there were all those, like, guardians on the sides that were, like, shooting at you as you're gliding through this, like, tunnel with these, like, collapsed pillars and huge,
it
you
was
know.
Like, yeah, it was some old ruins hidden underground.
It had, like, a massive statue at the end that you could pray to and spend spirit orbs if you had them. And, like, that was just a really cool, like, this game takes a ton of cues. And I don't know why I hadn't thought about this earlier, but this game takes so many cues from Shadow of the Colossus. Like, just the scale, the verticality, the kind of stripped down nature of it from past games, like, it is very Shadow of the Colossus. And I love that game. That game is really, really awesome. And I was glad to see that in this.
I feel like we're going to have another episode.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about the story in that one because clearly we haven't spent too much time on
right.
it.
You're right.
But I feel like so many things could have gone wrong with this game.
Yeah.
Like, but they really did their research.
Yeah.
They created a beautiful, massive world, and they tried some new things. They tried voice acting. I mean, yeah. I'm not gonna blame the American Nintendo studio for who they picked.
The localization team.
The Japanese voice acting was great, and it's only for certain cutscenes. You still get that whole, oh, like you get those little, like,
right.
clearly Japanese, like, character voices that they've done for years. You still get that.
Right.
And you also, like, they tried some new things with their story. Like,
yeah.
I feel like in every Zelda game, there's always a Princess Zelda who's like, something bad's gonna happen. Right. And everyone's like, no, whatever. In this game, right. they're like, yeah, we prepared for this.
Right.
Zelda told us something was coming. We prepared. And then it went wrong.
Right. And we've had to incubate Link for 100 years until he can regenerate and join us again, you
know.
That's
so interesting. You already have your ready-made hero.
Yeah.
He's ready to go. He's got the skills. He's lost some memories, but this is like your legendary hero.
Right.
And he's going to fix things. And like, you know, you had your guardians, like everyone was united, and it failed.
Yeah.
Like that, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like that seemed to be a risk that they took as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say beyond, like, the controls are a little stodgy, a little stiff, but that could just be the Joy-Cons. I'm not sure. We haven't sprung $70 for the Pro controller and probably won't because that's ridiculous. Beyond that though, beyond like the controls being a little bit messed up in some ways, like, so far I'm really, really liking this game, and it's gotten me back into Zelda in a way that, like, for a minute, like, after Twilight Princess, I was like, okay, well, like, if this is just going to be the formula from now on, I'm kind of good, you know. I don't know if I really need to see every single title in the series anymore. And this is like, this is a true system seller game. Like, I feel like there have been Xbox 360, that didn't really have a great, like, killer app day one. PlayStation 3 didn't really have a killer app day one. But, like, man, Nintendo Switch, the game to get is Zelda for sure. I can say that without a doubt.
Yeah. This game's been great. I think longtime Zelda fans who, I mean, personally, I was all about, like, sure, I'll play the same game over and over again. Like, I was perfectly fine with that. I loved this game. I loved the whole everything.
There's nothing wrong with the Zelda formula.
Right.
It's just, it's been a very long time. It hasn't changed a whole lot.
But this, I think, is good for, like, longtime fans.
Yeah.
For new fans, like, I know several people who didn't really play Zelda games who were like, this game is amazing. And I mean, it's just, it's refreshing. The story's a little bit different. You're not having to, like, prove to everyone that you're the hero. You are the hero.
Yeah.
People know who you are. They remember you from 100 years ago because characters in this game have long lifespans.
Right.
So it's just, it's different. You're meeting new people and you're meeting like a bunch of old allies.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about the story in the next episode. But so far, like game mechanics, how it's looking, I love this game.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll put in 100 hours.
Oh, God. We probably will.
We probably will. And there's no shame in that.
Nope. Thank you so much for listening to What's in a Game. If you liked this podcast at any point, go ahead and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. That helps us out a ton. We don't pay to advertise this show. Tell a friend, tell your coworkers, tell somebody about the podcast. And just thank you for listening in general. We've had a blast making this so far. Follow the show on Twitter at What's in a Game Pod and follow me at Cody Newell. What's in a Game is distributed by Fountain City Frequency and recorded at Kansas City's NPR member station KCUR 89.3. Go check out some of the other Fountain City Frequency podcasts on the network, like Iconoclast of Things, Archiver, and No Wrong Answers. Next time we're going to play Tacoma, and then we'll have our Zelda Part 2 either a week or two after that one. So we'll see you then.
Bye.